Mrs. Arenkilde Hansen. Thank you for coming to Radio Linguistica, the radio of DG Translation, specialized on language communication people. And you have come to talk to us. You're in charge of communication for the European Commission. And you have to come to talk to us about corporate communication and what I chose to call new opportunities, question mark, perhaps challenges as well. It has been a very, very special year, also for EU communication. How has DG Communication managed this COVID crisis?
Thank you very much for having me to have a conversation about this. It has indeed, as you say, been an exceptional and unprecedented time. And DG Communication has, over the past months, been fully mobilized, responding to the crisis in communication terms. And that response has been based on three principles: unity, speed, and clarity. And it has been, of course, very important to bring the European angle into the communication early on in the crisis that, of course, began and still is, of course, a health crisis, where national authorities are first responders, so to speak, in the first line of fire, also in communication terms. Speed is important during any crisis, but in a public health crisis, of course, it's vital. People need high quality, reliable information immediately on what to do to face the coronavirus in this case. And it meant for us in DG Communication that we very much also had to adjust the way that we work. Normally, as you know, when we communicate our different policies, each part of the Commission, of course, respecting the political priorities, very much communicates its messages to its own stakeholders, often when it comes to political communication under the guidance of the spokesperson service. And of course, the political level, our college is in charge at the political level. The communication, we, in addition to the spokesperson service, of course, also have the DGs themselves organizing communication. We have representations, and we have other parts of the Commission communicating, and we have campaigns and communication that often go ahead with relative independence, with corporate communication dealing with engaging citizens. And of course, when it comes to big joint corporate campaigns, typically coordinated, of course, and led by DG Communication. And during the coronavirus crisis, and there we come to the principle of unity and the coordination that is related to this, it became, of course, very essential that everybody was on the same page and that we were able to actually sing from the same hymn sheet, so to speak, and notably reflect the action that was being taken in response to the crisis at the political level. And since the president, of course, was in charge, and very quickly she organized her coronavirus response team, she also, in communication terms, became the figurehead, very much centralizing the top-level information through her now very well-known video messages, of which a long series exists that has explained very, very regularly with a high presence every time the Commission took action what we were doing. And of course, she was very much also seconded by the commissioners who were part of the coronavirus response team, who also very actively communicated. And they centralized this response team at political level, the political action indeed, and coordinated how the communication at political level should took place. Messaging was also very centralized in political terms around the spokesperson service day to day, with our press room also continuing to function throughout the crisis, and it went virtual, so to speak, or digital. We organized very quickly a digital press room where all our accredited journalists could continue to connect, and indeed, in addition to hearing the announcements of the day, connect with the spokesperson service. And then we had, and that was a novelty, we decided in DG Communication, and we got the backing from our Corporate Communication Steering Committee to set up a coronavirus communication task force that we then shared throughout what you could call the first phase of the crisis, the immediate crisis response period. And we also mobilized our services, of course, every tool that we had at our disposal to enable us in this circumstance where indeed physical events became impossible. Our centralized website, our Europa website for information, where we created a coronavirus response site. We used that very, very actively to put out information and communicate about the action that we, the Commission and the European Union, was taking. And that extended to rebutting also harmful disinformation that also has abounded in this crisis. A little figure, we've had 6.5 million page views of this website approximately since March. And much of that traffic was generated through our social media activity. More than 22,000 individual posts went out with messages on our platform since January. So I think we can safely say that social media has absolutely been at the heart of getting our message across in this crisis. We have some encouraging engagement numbers. And of course, in addition to all the early action that was taken indeed to facilitate the crisis response in terms of health, also we saw later on in the crisis that the sure instrument to preserve employment, a very, very important tool that we proposed and got adopted very, very quickly by member states, and which has now been activated and will shortly, let's say, support and second the efforts to preserve employment by member states. Also, that became, for example, a very popular topic on social media because it was indeed very much an instrument concretely designed to support people in terms of facing the social and economic impact of the crisis. So here again, our representations in member states had a very important role, respond both communicating and reporting also back to feed further decisions. So communication, very much a two-way street. We, of course, mobilized very much also our audiovisual and graphic designers to support our communication actions, to visualize them, to visualize the action we took. And indeed, we focused very much also in those early stages of the visual aspect of the crisis, because this was extremely important to demonstrate the added value of the European Union action. It has to be remembered that what people essentially saw were their national leaders and experts on the ground every day accounting for how the government and indeed the national authorities were taking care of the crisis and responding, whereas they didn't include the European dimension very much in their communication. So this was very much for the European Union institutions and the Commission in particular to do as initiator of a lot of the action. So for example, showing how after these initial difficulties of getting member states to work together and coordinate the crisis, when we were able to actually gradually ensure that we could channel things like equipment and masks and ventilators and other equipment to member states where it was most needed. The action we took, for example, to facilitate the repatriation of stranded passengers in the early phases of the crisis, just to mention those things, the way that we were able to build stocks of medical equipment, and all these actions were very important to visualize as we progress in our crisis response. There were lots of other actions taken, but where we are now, I would call it in a second phase. When we moved into that second phase after the first immediate, very reactive crisis response, also in communication terms, it was about, you could say, reclaiming momentum in the communication and leading the narrative and basically continuing on one hand to have consistent messaging and build on the discipline that we had built up in the first phase, but also on the other hand be much more proactive, because as the bigger initiatives took shape, for example in the area of tourism, transport and borders, there we were, and also when it came to organizing and communicating specific events such as the vaccine pledging events that our president spearheaded, and now next week it will be the State of the European Union that of course also very much will be building on what we have done to respond to the crisis. That enabled us then to work to develop also and adapt future campaigns and existing plans around communicating the European Green Deal and the Digital Europe, which are of course top priorities and which remain absolutely central in our political agenda. So what we then ventured on to do was to start adapting those plans to the new situation, with notably this new recovery plan for Europe that we have worked so hard to bring to the table with our proposals in May, becoming a reality in terms of the first political deal that was struck with member states end of July, and where we now have the, of course, the negotiations ongoing with the European Parliament. So all these things, the policy development, the political situation, the evolution of the health crisis, of course, constantly shaped and were shaped also by our communication, because policy and communication are two sides of the same coin. So in this phase, which is a kind of bridging phase between the health crisis, of course, which hopefully will find its solution also notably by the successful development of a vaccine, that of course very much defines how quickly we will be able to move into another phase, sort of firmly anchoring our communication around the recovery, because that of course is now the big communication project for all of us, and will be the case in the foreseeable future. So I think that's a little bit of a long answer, but much has been accomplished, and we have learned a lot about crisis communication as well in this absolutely testing period for people in Europe and for the European Union, but where the European Union, and with very much leadership from our president, has faced up to a crisis that and brought an unprecedented recovery plan for Europe on the to the fore, very much of course using also our multi-annual financial framework and this new next generation EU instrument as the tools that will enable Europe to come out of the crisis stronger.
Sorry, I probably muted myself, which is very funny. No, you've convinced us that you struggled. There was resilient efforts to convince citizens and show that there was a structured team of pilots in the plane, and it was not an easy thing to do. But now, after looking back to what's actually going on, but I think everybody has learned, and you've shown us how you have to learn quickly sometimes. The recovery plan and what happened in late July, I mean, things have been dormant for a good while. Do you, as Director General of Communication, see this as an opportunity? And how can this be turned into an opportunity for better explaining Europe, for convincing citizens that the crisis, there are solutions, and there, the windows are open for innovative thinking, and we do have keys to this economic crisis?
Indeed, we have a very strong key in the recovery plan for Europe that we just touched upon. And of course, we are now at a point in the crisis where a lot of immediate impact have been mitigated, and member states have spared no effort, and Europe has spared no effort to support this. And the recovery plan will be absolutely decisive when it comes to alleviating those impacts that have yet to come. When of course the effects of the crisis are deepening in a number of areas. The public opinion, of course, was affected by the crisis, and that will certainly continue to be the case. So also this we need to take into account as we go forward. But I also think that it has uncovered, this situation has uncovered opportunities, because while our polls certainly showed that the reputation of the European Union suffered during the crisis, and you will not be surprised if it was in Italy that public opinion probably suffered the most. It has also recovered since, for the reasons we discussed, the response, member states came together, they realized that we are stronger together. And our opinion surveys, Eurobarometer included, has shown that, or the surveys that have been conducted, because actually it's been very difficult to do Eurobarometer surveys, but there have been different surveys conducted nevertheless during the crisis that have shown that actually the visibility in the European Union of the action taken has been quite high and consistently growing, in that we have been able to see that 76% have actually seen, heard, or read about the measures that were taken to respond to the crisis. And at the same time, more than half of Europeans believe that we should have a greater financial means to respond and indeed to act in the European Union. So whereas there has been a decrease in trust for sure, which we will need to work hard to restore and earn back, there has also been an increase in expectations as to what the European Union should do. Of course, the focus was in the beginning very much on public health, where, of course, the competences are limited in many respects, but they are now also shifting to consider the future. And there, of course, economic and social impact are very much in focus. And our recovery plan, of course, will very much be focused on precisely alleviating the effects of the crisis and building also the and supporting the transformations, both when it comes to the green the green area in the environment, climate change, and responding to that, and the digital transformation. That also was already a priority for this commission.
So you had a lot of things on your hands. All this are, okay, an unprecedented crisis.
Yeah,
a new breakthrough at European level. So you have to manage that. I suppose this will be part of Mrs. Ursula von der Leyen's speech on 16th of September. I suspect that, and we are looking forward to that, because there has been a strong feeling that Europe was always defensive a little bit, that it was attacked, that it was sort of a... So are we now regaining confidence because there is an emergency, there is no alternative, we are in charge, fully in charge, there's no other help to be expected. Is there new energy stemming from that?
I think you can say that is the case, and there's also a very assertive agenda that we are not just blindly pursuing as if nothing had changed. The priorities, as I was saying, are still very much focused on the Green Deal and the digital agenda. But of course, now what we will be looking for is a green recovery and a digital recovery and a resilient recovery that where nobody is left behind. So, and I think that precisely this determination to show that Europe is part of the solution here in terms of getting out of what hit everybody in Europe as a health crisis. Everybody was hit, but of course the impacts were diverging. This is something that leaders have acknowledged when in solidarity with each other, after a lot of discussion that we saw, of course, on which should it be done with loans or grants or a mixture of both as our president had proposed? Should it be done indeed with transfers? There was talk about corona bonds, etc., etc. And then this very original solution that we came up with, that where it was able to actually rally all member states around that solution. Yes, that gives reason to have confidence and indeed to be assertive that with this solidarity, with this unprecedented firepower that we now have to be able to make a difference for Europe in terms of enabling member states or supporting member states to recover from their different positions, of course, or the different impacts that this health crisis has had and the economic impact as well. Well, that gives a lot of reason for confidence because we now have the means and we have the willingness and we are able to now show also in communication terms that Europe is there to support and protect and also help Europeans build a better future.
As far as I understand, there is of course this relaunch, but it is not always sufficient to count on the member states to explain. For example, the SURE program has not been mentioned in many national plans for recovery, not all the time. So it's as if, and you said so in a way, you have to communicate, there must be a voice, otherwise it all vanishes in the regions and hopefully all the way to the citizens. So you have to address the citizens, and I think there is for that a strong trend towards localizing. It's localizing that is getting closer to the people, reaching out to the citizens who in some way have been feeling as if they were left out for a little while, for some time in any case. And this is a technique, an approach, a political approach, but also a technique that translators are very familiar with. Do you think, and how do you vision the role of the translators and interpreters? Is this cooperation, I mean, is their work embedded in your reflection? How do you vision the role of language and translation experts in corporate communication?
Language experts play an extremely important role in the localization of content that you mention, in actually getting, of course, these priorities that I mentioned across in ways that makes sense for people where they are. And we do have DGT field officers in 25 member states who perform a very, very wide range of important tasks to precisely support this localization in all its dimensions. It's not only performing translation services, even if that is already extremely important. It's also in terms of actually helping to adapt the communication to the situation and the context, political, economic, social, and cultural, on the ground, that actually takes up part of their time. And they're also often involved in outreach activities. And that varies a lot, of course, from representation to representation. But I think you will find a very multifaceted role in the translators. And they can help attuning the messages and also to interact with our stakeholders and citizens on the ground, and of course participating also in language days, European Day of Languages, and other events of this nature, and then of course helping also us to get the right intelligence back from the representations on the ground. So they are really very, very part and parcel of our localization strategy. And then, of course, by operating also through multipliers, they do interpret and carry messages beyond our traditional audiences and stakeholders. So, and this is really important. And they're, in that sense, they are, you know, alongside media and journalists, civil society organizations, academia, very, very essential also to help us pop the bubble, so to speak, and get outside Brussels and indeed act and get across, have an impact with our communication.
So it's the idea is a few people from Brussels trying to reach out to almost 500 million citizens. It's a bit of a challenge, and translation, of course, is a welcome help. Another thing that translators mentioned, they are, of course, more and more asked to super fast work, emergency communication, translating on the web, translating online, embedding machine translation. I mean, the job has not been entirely changed, but it has evolved and the tendencies have accelerated quite a bit. And very often the translators say, but because we have to move so fast, we have to be prepared. And we must interact also with the source. I mean, it's very important. We have the intelligence of words. We are close to the language that people talk, but we must also be close to those who draft the messages, the speech writers. This is essential for us to be ready, because we must know their culture. We must know their profile, perhaps construct profiles even. So this closeness is very essential for a good quality job. I mean, do you understand this concern of translators that they have to deliver very quickly, but they must be close to the center as well? I mean, you know, we have to go both ways.
I fully understand this, and that's why it's so important that the field officers are really integral part of the teams on the ground, led of course in each case by the heads of representation who run our representations in member states, and all the activities that we organize here at headquarters, where we have a directorate that is responsible for managing and ensuring that the representations and all their teams have the information and the guidance that they need to be indeed close to the core messages, informed about what's coming up, able to engage and indeed also feedback what is needed to be able to communicate effectively locally. All of that is extremely important, that the field officers from DGT are also part of those activities, meetings, video conferences, of course it is, mostly these days, but we definitely make a strong effort to do that. And then, of course, from time to time, we're also lucky to see the field officers come back and participate in conferences and activities here in Brussels, so that we can engage with them directly. But It's a very important point, and I fully acknowledge this importance. It's not so easy to make them sit next to the speech writers of the president every day. That's true, but they are very involved and in production, and by the way, also have been often extremely valuable in helping make sure that the political proofreading, so to speak, of some of the most important emblematic speeches and products from the political level have been very well crafted and linguistically strong. So no, they do a very important job.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to hear this. My colleagues are aware of the work they do, even though I'm not myself involved. And also the fact that the translators in general, not just the field officers, need to be close to
Of
the
course.
source. So I'm very happy to hear that you fully understand that and that there will be even more interaction in the future, given the urgencies. September is going to be extremely intense. We are all excited because Europe is very much in demand, I believe, and must convince people that it must be demanded, that we must expect things from Europe, and Europe must deliver. So let me thank you very much for this direct contribution and wish you every luck for the great job to come. I mean, the harsh job to come in September, October, and so on. Thank you very much,
Well, thank
Pia.
you, and really thanks for communicating Europe, and the European Union is really a massive job, and to do that we need all the support we can get. So thank you also for your interest and support in this endeavor.
We'll keep the eyes open. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.